And we're back live at Occupy Portland. We have another guest in the chair. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you want to lay on us?
My name is Paul Cienfuegos, and for the last 15 or 16 years, I've been working as full-time as I possibly can as an educator and organizer to dismantle corporate constitutional rights and to start enshrining community rights in their place at the local level.
Do you have a legal background in that regard?
I'm a community organizing background.
Okay. And what got you interested in that?
About 15 years ago, I came upon an article by Richard Grossman, who pointed out that he's from the Program on Corporations Law and Democracy, or POCLAD, and he pointed out that all of the single-issue anti-corporate activism that we've been doing in this country for decades, really, they aren't issues at all. They're all symptoms of allowing corporations to be part of the body politic, giving them free speech rights and property rights and contract rights and commerce rights. In other words, giving them corporate constitutional rights as if they were persons under law, and that we couldn't possibly win against clear-cutting the healthcare crisis, the foreclosure crisis, toxics, jobs overseas, etc., if we didn't start tackling the bigger question, which is who is in charge in this country? We the people are our corporate creations, these legal fictions
right.
that we call corporations. And so almost all of the activism that we're doing today is pretty ineffective. And you can see that just from the state of our country.
Because the corporations are the way corporate power has grown is the root of all evil or something.
The way corporate rights has grown, yeah.
Right.
And so people say, oh, it's because there's so much, they have so much money, but that's really an aside.
Right.
They have constitutional rights, and so their free speech trumps our free speech. Right. Their property rights trump our property rights, et cetera.
Right. Do you want to trace the evolution of corporate rights briefly for us?
Sure. Take a couple minutes, but I can do that. People don't realize that it started way before 1886 with Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, which is the beginning of corporate personhood, but I can start there, and then I'll work backwards a little bit. So in 1886, one of the first giant corporations in the United States, a railroad corporation, went all the way to the Supreme Court and won personhood rights under the 14th Amendment, which was the one that gave due process rights to freed slaves, or to be more accurate, freed male slaves, because due process didn't come to women until the early 20th century. So, and after that, they won the First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment over many decades that followed. That gave them free speech protections. I don't know if you guys know this, but free speech for a corporation is now defined as money equals speech because of a 1970s era Supreme Court decision. So you can't limit how much money a corporation can give to an election because that would limit its right to speak to us. That you also can't limit its political speech when it lies to us because that's its protected speech. Its lobbying is its protected speech, and on and on. So that's free speech. Property rights, which again they won through the Constitution, rights as persons, is really kind of overwhelming. It boggles the mind. For example, it's gotten so crazy that now they have control over everything that their lawyers can get the courts to agree is intangible property. They have property rights as persons over. And intellectual property, but it also includes decision-making itself. So, for example, a corporate board of directors has full decision-making authority over all production decisions, investment decisions, organization of work decisions. So pretty much the entire economic decision-making realm is a corporate realm because their boards have corporate personhood rights over that realm. The decisions themselves are a property right won through the Supreme Court. So that kind of brings us up to Citizens United, January of 2010, which all of the press, pretty much from Democracy Now! To Fox, misreported and said that Citizens United was the floodgates opening for corporate funding of elections. That was really not true. Floodgates opened in the 70s with Money Equals Speech. And they've been getting wider ever since.
What did Citizens United do then?
Citizens United did two things. It allowed donations to be coming from more anonymous sources. And it allowed, and it allowed money to come from the general fund instead of coming through their PACs, which is pretty insignificant when you consider that they already could give as much money as they wanted. And anybody who's been alive for, you know, 40 or 50 years knows the last few decades has already been an absolute crisis in terms of corporate manipulation of elections through their money.
It sounds like what you're saying is that they achieved a lot of these rights through the courts. Is that typically
They're
true?
All achieved through the Supreme Courts. It's interesting. The way corporations win new rights is through the Supreme Court decisions. Five white men, and they have a new right. How do we win new rights? Through constitutional amendments. And boy, that's a much trickier process.
Is that what you're working towards now in your education
campaign?
That's
actually not. We see a much more direct link to wins. But can I spend just one more minute and go back from 1886 and talk about all the stuff that's not about corporate personhood? Because a lot of this, a lot of the people who are talking about corporate rights are really misnaming the problem as corporate personhood. And there's all sorts of rights that have nothing to do with corporate personhood, and I'll just spend a moment on them. 1819, in the Supreme Court case that involved Dartmouth University, it's a little too complicated in a soundbite to explain, but it limited substantially the right of state legislatures to define corporate charters in a subordinate way. 1860s and 70s, for the first time, the Supreme Court, using the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, decides that when the Commerce Clause says the federal government has the right to regulate commerce between the states, that gives them the right to overrule state legislatures that are trying to block corporate harms from entering their states. So that's the beginning of kind of what we know as the kind of more NAFTA-type rules, where protection of health and welfare protection by a government is no longer legal. And so corporate rights now trump the right of a state legislature to protect its citizens from corporate harm.
Have we seen recent
60s, 70s?
Recent examples of that? Was there something in California?
The most famous example is states that are trying to stop toxic sludge from entering their state or nuclear waste from entering the state, that sort of thing. And their own lawyers, their own activist lawyers will say, no, you can't do this. It violates corporate rights. So, and then the last thing is, in the 1870s and 80s, New Jersey and Delaware state legislatures convinced pretty much all the large corporations at the time to recharter in their two states, and away went all of the requirements and prohibitions that for a century had been written into corporate charters. And, I mean, really extraordinary stuff, like a corporation can't own another corporation or merge with another corporation. All records are public. All stockholders and directors are liable for all harms and debts. Right. No limited liability. No donations to political campaigns. No donations to civic organizations, et cetera, et cetera.
And when,
chartered for one particular purpose, end of story.
Right. And when did this happen, the rechartering?
When did what happen?
The rechartering, you said?
Rechartering. New Jersey and Delaware offered a whole new paradigm of chartering in the 1870s and 80s. Just before the personhood decision in 1886. So, I mean, all of that happened before corporations started winning personhood under law. They had already won a whole bunch of other constitutional protections earlier throughout the 1800s.
Well, Paul, that's a little depressing. What's the good news?
The good news is that for about 10 or 11 years now, citizens in increasing numbers of municipalities have been rising up and passing local ordinances that are legally binding, that nullify all corporate constitutional rights within their municipalities, and that ban all sorts of corporate activities. It started in Wells Township, which is a rural conservative township in Pennsylvania, 10 or 12 years ago when they were trying to, it's a community of family-owned hog farms, and a 15,000-head hog farm factory was destined to be put in the middle of their township, and they tried desperately to get the Pennsylvania regulatory agencies to stop it, but as people increasingly find out these days, regulations are for allowing something to happen and ameliorating harm, not saying no. And so they finally gave up, and they, working with a public interest law firm in Pennsylvania, they passed the anti-corporate farming law into place in Wells Township 10 or 12 years ago. It banned all non-family-owned corporations from engaging in farming or owning farmland.
Well, was that challenged?
It actually wasn't challenged. Most of these, there are now 140 ordinances later in six Northeast states, Maryland, New Hampshire, Maine, Pennsylvania, New York, and
Vermont?
Somewhere, I can't remember the sixth. Those 140 communities have now all banned a certain kind of corporate activity and have all nullified corporate constitutional rights.
Well, it sounds so simple.
Law.
It sounds so simple. What would something look like here?
Well, I'll tell you about what's already happening in Spokane. It's going to be on the ballot in a few weeks. It'll be the first one on the West Coast to try this.
All right.
It's a slightly different type ordinance. It's a community bill of rights ordinance. In Spokane, if it passes in a few weeks, no indication yet if it will or not, it's massively opposed by the business establishment and local elected officials, but has a lot of organizational support. It's a four-point bill of rights. Number one, workers shall have full constitutional protections while at work. Most people don't realize that when you walk across the threshold of your workplace, you lose all your free speech rights, property rights, all sorts of consent rights. We have no constitutional rights at work, folks. I don't know if you knew that. Two, neighborhood organizations would for the first time have veto power over industrial and commercial developments they don't want in their neighborhoods.
How would that work? Is that written out?
Through the neighborhood associations.
Wow, I like the sound of that.
Three, for the first time, nature is being protected in many of these ordinances as well. Out of the 140 ordinances, about 30 of them, for the first time, guarantee rights of nature under law, that nature has inherent constitutionally protected rights. The third part of Spokane's law is that the Spokane River and its aquifers will be protected to thrive and evolve, and that public can directly sue government or corporations that cause harm to the Spokane River and aquifer. This has never happened in that way before.
Oh. Is that through a ballot measure that's on the...
It's on the ballot in Spokane. And four, lastly, any corporate constitutional right which interferes in the enforcement of the three I just mentioned, community rights, will be nullified. That's what's happening in Spokane. But the model of most of these 140 communities is banning a particular corporate activity and nullifying corporate rights. And the most exciting is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which last November banned fracking completely and nullified corporate rights.
At the state level?
No, Pittsburgh.
Oh, Pittsburgh, you're saying?
The municipal government.
Well, who's fracking in Pittsburgh?
200 fracking leases were already signed and they were ready to start drilling in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh sits on the Marcellus Shale deposit. Now, as you notice, almost everybody, if you pay attention to the fracking issue, every other community, with few exceptions, is begging state officials, county officials, regulatory agencies, please stop the fracking. And this movement is saying we're sick and tired of begging and pleading with our elected officials to stop the harm in our communities. We're sick and tired of going through the regulatory process to get corporations to stay out of our communities that are causing harm. And we're now going to start exercising our self-governing authority. And I'll read you the opening paragraph of Oregon's state constitution, and you'll see where this authority comes from. It's authority that we've been pretty much ignoring for 100 plus years in this country. Here's the opening paragraph of Oregon's state constitution, and every state constitution uses similar language. Article 1, Bill of Rights, Section 1, Natural Rights Inherent in People. We declare that all power is inherent in the people. All free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. This is state law. This is the first paragraph of our state law in Oregon. Pennsylvania, same thing. Iowa, same thing. Very similar language in every state constitution. This was ratified in 1857 in Oregon by the voters, by a vote of the people. Of course, the voters in 1857 were white men.
Yeah. Back to Pittsburgh quickly. How did that come about? Was that a citizen referendum, or was the city council put that on?
No, it was a direct vote of the Pittsburgh City Council, and they voted 9-0 to ban corporate fracking and nullify all corporate constitutional rights within the city. Oh. This happened in November, and it came about because of this emergency situation where these leases were being signed, and it was going to destroy the city of Pittsburgh's water supply, just like it is all over the Marcellus Shale. And for some reason, most communities are still so colonized in the way they're doing their activism that they're begging elected officials rather than exercising their self-governing authority.
Well, I, for one, am very tired of begging elected officials. Do you see anything in local politics, city or state, that would be ripe for such an approach?
Well, I mean, I would turn that question over to you and to everyone listening, which is, what do we actually want? What kind of Portland do we actually want to have? So, for example, do we want to have a city of Portland where every resident is guaranteed affordable health care? We could pass that sort of thing and nullify corporate rights in one ballot initiative. Do we want to have a fundamental transformation towards sustainability goals of our transportation infrastructure, let's say, or our renewable energy infrastructure, let's say? We could pass that through a single ordinance and nullify corporate rights in the city of Portland. You know, we could end foreclosures of people who are losing their homes in the city of Portland. We could do anything. We are the sovereign people. We govern ourselves at the local level.
And that process is referendum.
It's a referendum, or if we have a city council that has enough backbone, they could pass it directly. Yeah. Pittsburgh City Council had backbone. 9-0. So I have been working pretty intensively here at Occupy Portland now for 2 or 3 weeks. I lead workshops, little introductory 2-hour workshops in this work twice a week, every Tuesday and Thursday from 2 to 4, in the tent next to the workshop tent next to the library. I'm here a couple times a week leading these 2-hour intro workshops. I've got more and more committees excited about this option for where Occupy Portland might want to go, because I think the question we need to be asking ourselves in the Occupy uprisings is, do we want, is our goal really merely to put together another series of demands, which we then demand of higher level government officials? Or do we start exercising our power of self-governance at the local level? In my vision, and the vision of the movement I'm associated with, the community rights movement, which is becoming a national movement, is that really what every Occupy community could do is focus on passing ordinances at their local community level that nullify corporate constitutional rights. And that would be just this enormous step forward for basic democracy in this country.
And it seems to fit in with the ideals of Occupy Portland. When you say nullify constitutional rights, I can't understand how a local government can do that if the Supreme Court has ordained.
Oh, the Supreme Court's not going to agree with it, and neither are state legislatures. But we're using our self-governing authority that's under the state constitutions and under the preamble of the United States Constitution that says we the people are sovereign, and our government, be it federal, state, or local, serves us, is responsible to us, is accountable to us, and we have the right to alter or abolish it if it's not serving us. And based on that, 140 communities have done this. Now, you asked me a really critical question a few minutes ago, is there not some pushback from corporations? And yes, of course there is. And there's also pushback from state legislatures who these days mostly serve corporations and not people, sadly. But what's so interesting is these ordinances have been written in a very new and unique way. They're written in such a way to force the corporate actor or to force the state actor to argue in a public court of law that the corporation or the state has more constitutional rights to do whatever they want to do in Portland, Oregon, than the people of Portland, Oregon. That's what they have to argue. They have to argue that the entire myth, that democracy is a myth, that what we were taught about our rights is a myth, and that the people of Portland and every other community have no rights at all, and we're going to bull right through you in public in the courts. And they haven't dared to make that argument hardly at all in 140 ordinances that have been passed. And quite honestly, think about this. If the people of Portland have already passed such an ordinance, and a corporation sues us and says that violates our rights, and they have to argue in a Portland court that they have more rights to do all sorts of things in our city than we have rights to defend and define our own city, imagine the uprising that takes place in response among Portland residents. Imagine the outrage that happens in response.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where this movement is headed. We're trying to create what's called a crisis of jurisdiction and argue who's in charge here in Portland, the people who live here, or an absentee corporation.
Well, I think that just the tense here is a statement of that to a certain extent.
It's absolutely fascinating movement that I'm part of. Yeah. And I'm actually, sadly, I'm still the only person in the whole state who's doing this work in a focused way. This is mostly a Northeast United States movement so far. And I moved here to Portland from Northern California in April, mainly because I want to help to launch this work statewide in Oregon.
Well, that's awesome. I think that is the good news, sir. Thanks for doing that.
You bet.
Have any ideas bubbled up in your work sessions about an issue to try this on?
You know, mostly people are asking me, and I keep putting it back in their hands. It's like what we are so used to as progressive, as left, as green, whatever activists, is working in emergency response mode, trying to stop that clear cut, trying to stop that toxic mess, trying to stop that job factory from going overseas, etc. We never get around in our single issue activism to asking ourselves, what is it that we want? Because a sovereign people need to ask that question of ourselves. What do the people of Portland want?
Right.
And I'm actually involved in the early stages of a new committee here in Occupy Portland. It's a Pioneer Square Exploratory Committee. It's only had a couple of meetings to discuss the possibility of starting to organize citywide democratic participation conversations in Pioneer Square a couple times a week.
Like the General Assembly's here.
The next month.
A similar format?
No, because the General Assembly's one voice at a time.
Hmm.
We're going to bring in 10 and 15 facilitators who are each facilitating small group discussions that fill Pioneer Square with the city listening to and speaking to itself, asking itself as the 99%, what do we want? Not what are we trying to stop, but what do we, the people of Portland, want?
Right. Well, again, getting back to reining in corporate power, I want to put that in concrete terms a little bit so I can understand it better. One of my single issue things I've been frustrated with is the way development happens here. You know, we have a zoning code, and then we have the enforcement of the zoning code. How can these ideas help me in that regard? I don't want a four-story glass condo to take the place of two single-family houses.
Well, we're used to zoning as the only way that we can stop development. And once again, we bypass that, and through our own self-governing authority, we pass laws. That fundamentally shift who gets to make these decisions. So you could be putting forward, of course, it would have to be passed by a majority vote of the population or of the city council.
So the procedure would be either put it on the ballot through an initiative.
Or go through the city council, or ask the city council to put it on the ballot as an initiative and bypass all the signature gathering work, which is a half a year of intensive work.
Right.
So you really got three options, but it ends up being city council vote or public vote.
Right. And then the example you gave was community associations actually have veto power somehow.
Over developments in their neighborhoods. Absolutely.
It sounds like the humans have the rights. The humans who live there have the rights.
Exactly. That's what this is about, is giving rights back to the collectivity of human beings in a city.
Right.
Again, because it's a community rights, this isn't a rugged individualism rights movement. It's a community rights movement. So again, it has to be majority based. But, you know, you look at the polls, a majority of Americans across the political spectrum want universal affordable health care, but we can't even get it discussed by our federal government. A majority want us out of Iraq and Afghanistan now. We can't get it discussed by our federal government.
A
majority of Americans. A majority of Americans want...
higher taxes on rich people.
Exactly. Yeah. Want their taxes spent wisely. I mean, the Citizens United decision a year and a half ago, 76% of Republicans were outraged at it. 85% of Democrats were outraged at it. Yeah. So, you know, this is a no-brainer.
This is a no-brainer.
Right? This is a no-brainer. The reason that things aren't moving forward is that we're begging our elected officials to take care of us.
I'm sick of that.
And at the municipal level, we have now proven in 140 communities and climbing, 139 towns and one major city, Pittsburgh, that we the people have and are exercising our own self-governing authority.
And tied it up in such a way it's difficult or embarrassing for corporations to go after it.
Very difficult, because they have to prove that our rights are irrelevant and theirs trump ours in a court of law in public space.
Awesome. Well, Paul,
so they have to peel away all of these established laws that are completely outrageous that the public has never approved over 200 years.
That's awesome. I think that's great. Thanks for sharing the good news. Can you give the time and place of your workshops again?
I can. Again, yes. It's this Thursday, tomorrow, 2 to 4, and next week, Tuesday and Thursday, 2 to 4, in the workshop tent next to the library tent on the north block of occupation. And I'm also leading two-day intensives in mid-November in Eugene and in mid-January in Portland. And I will happily do a free two-hour introductory workshop anywhere else at any other time in the larger Portland area. You just commit to bringing 15 to 20 people together, and I'll show up for a free two-hour introduction.
How can people get a hold of you?
They can phone me at 503-233-1166, or they can learn more about this on my website and contact me by email that way at paulcienfuegos.com. That's Paul C I. E N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, U E G O S as in Sam, paulcienfuegos.com. So I'm available to share the good news.
Thanks for sharing the good news today, Paul.
Thank you so much for the interview opportunity.
Awesome. Well done. Well, Martha, Well, Martha, that was awesome. I hadn't heard much about that. A direct action. In terms of taking back the rights of the humans, in terms of putting it back in balance with corporations. Paul's back for one last message.
Can I just say one last thing?
Of course you can.
Having just heard you as I was walking away, is I was actually the speaker last week on David Barsamian's alternative radio. It was my speech that was given on 240 radio stations across the world in 8 countries.
Nice.
On this topic. And it's another really good, solid intro. You can hear my speech. It was in Eugene in May, and it played internationally last week on KABU and all sorts of other stations. My speech is being rebroadcast on KABU, I think, the morning of November 8th, I believe. But you can check with KABU for that. And you can download the transcript or get an MP3 of the speech through alternativeradio.org for just a buck or two.
Thanks for stopping by, Paul. Well done. Check the KABU website to learn about reining in corporate power in your own community. 140 communities across the United States have done it already. Why not Portland? Why not Portland Zoning Code? Why not Portland Water? We have the power. Why wait? Very impressive.
We do have the power, and it's pretty exciting to see how many people are waking up one day and say, maybe we do.
Maybe we do. I think as we look around, we realize we do. We look at our fellow man and say, that guy is just like me. Well, it seems like the march is starting. The camp is clearing out a bit.
I was talking with some folks who came down for the march but wanted to camp and visit it a little bit. And the woman I was talking to was part of the Old Town Clinic way, way back in the old days when Bologna Joe's was still there.
I heard about Bologna Joe's on the Burnside Bridge, or
yeah,
just off it, right?
Just the east side of the Burnside Bridge. It's now a vacant lot.
Do you know the story of Bologna Joe's, Martha?
It was food, shelter for the homeless, and I have an interesting personal story. The rules were you had to be clean and sober. And there was some alleged scandal that kind of put an end to Bologna Joe's. There was also a big developer who built a big building next door, and it wouldn't surprise me at all that that had something to do with it. We helped Bologna Joe's close the doors. Portland Rescue Mission has sort of become the de facto center for the random homeless. But my story is, this was Bologna Joe's is still there, and I was part of a group who was doing an alternative monthly newspaper, Portland Free Press. We did some great stuff. We just had no business sense, which there's a whole epidemic of that.
Yeah.
We were on the east side, the Produce Row area. The upstairs of a big warehouse. We found somebody just thrown it out of a big, big filing cabinet. So we wandered down. We're going to bring it on back. We always need filing cabinets. And we're struggling with it. This humongous man, and he was tall and broad and just a bear of a person, came up and said, "Can I help you with that?" He pretty much picked it up and carried it by himself. And it's Jerry. Jerry's a war vet. Jerry's epileptic. He's living under the bridge. This was before they started sweeping the underside of the bridge on the east side. We thanked him, gave him coffee, or I don't know what we gave him. "Anything else you need?" He said, "Yeah, I sure need a winter coat." The man's like a 3X. I said, "Oh, well, haven't you been to, like, Bologna Joe's?" He said, "I just can't do the program." Okay. So I called around churches and places like that. Nobody had a 3X size winter coat. We just took up a collection and went to, I don't know, Andy and Bags or someplace like that and got one for him. And he became our protector and our good buddy. He invited us to go down under the bridge and meet his friends. Okay, we're journalists. We'll go for it. And it was really an interesting, amazing experience. Under the freeway supports, each little stretch had a separate camp. There was Hispanic, there was a Native American, there was Black. And he took us to the vets camp. And that was really my first introduction to the plight of homeless vets. And all these guys pulled out their discharge papers like an executive would hand out a business card. "My honorable discharge." And here they were living under the bridge.
What year was that about, Martha?
90. Thereabouts.
Yeah. Was the camp pretty peaceful?
Yes.
Yeah. Any similarities to Occupy Portland?
Occupy Portland seems to be pulling off diversity pretty well. And folks under the bridge didn't eat anywhere near as well.
Yeah.
The group identity of each little camp was kind of interesting. The circle of vets, and they had something they shared. A little while after we met Jerry, one of the homeless vets was killed a few blocks away. And they were angry and they were sad, and some kind of outrage that didn't have a name or didn't have a word. It's a homeless guy. Who cares? It's not going to make the news. Nobody's going to mourn. Got real quiet here all of a sudden.
Yeah, the marks are starting up.
It's been fun wandering around, talking just to random folk. A man who's a guitar maker said he worked in the corporate world for the man for the longest time, 25 years, he said. And one day, he just couldn't do it anymore, and now he's blissfully happy making guitars. Don't talked to another man who didn't want to come in the camp. He had heard all the rumors. He was paranoid about it. Do you want to walk with you? He said, no. I just wish I could do something. Ask him, what do you want to do? He said, well, I've been thinking about this bank thing, pulling money out of the big banks. And I told him about the church consortium that pulled out $9 million or something like that. I asked him, do you have a church? He hesitated a little bit. He said, well, I got AA. Works for me. Get your buds to pull their money out of the bank. We talked a little bit about credit unions. What a good plan.
.4:45, the march is starting up at 5. Let me get a quick announcement for that. That's called March Together with Occupy Portland. As many of you remember, Occupy Portland started October 6th with a giant march through the streets of downtown Portland. About 5 to 10,000 people gathered at the waterfront and spontaneously marched through the city, first to Pioneer Square, and then to Chapman Square, where the occupation remains today. Today, October 26th at 5 o'clock at Directors Park, Southwest Yamhill and Taylor in Park Avenues, downtown Portland. The march will start at 5 o'clock, 15 minutes. Come on down if you can. Have you been marching yourself, Martha?
I have marched several times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I like being in the street.
I do, too.
I like walking down the middle of the street.
The march from Waterfront Park was so beautiful. It was really, really awesome.
It was really awesome. I think part of it for me was it was illegal or something. We didn't have a permit or something. And we didn't need a permit all of a sudden. And the police were great about it. I mean, I'm not saying we were in their face. The police were cooperating the whole way. And
I've been on a couple marches in Portland where unpermitted, there was numbers. Numbers matter.
Mm.
Folks just said, oh, it's too crowded on the sidewalk. We're taking the street. So. The March on Waterfront, I do not remember that much glorious energy. It was kind of giggly and kind of high, just jubilant. That was a thing of wonder.
It was. It started at Waterfront Park with basically an open mic session for airing your grievances. I remember hearing so many different voices. And I think what it was about then is still what it's about, and it's listening to other people and forming community about that. Although people have many different ideas and many different reasons for being there, the community was formed and people were heard. Your voice was heard. And today that it continues in the General Assembly and through all decision-making.
True. A curiosity about the numbers for that march is... There's no little counter how many feet passed by, but apparently the official capacity of Pioneer Square is 10,000, and the march filled...
It was overflowing.
...rammed and overflowing.
I couldn't get in. I was on the outskirts.
It was packed, totally packed solid.
It was great.
And spilling over onto the street. Wow. So I think 12,000 would not be an unreasonable number.
Wow. Impressive. I remember as we were approaching... Pioneer Square, people from buildings were throwing out confetti. It was like we were in a parade and cheering us on the whole way. It was quite a feeling.
I'm reminded of, maybe the 4th anniversary of one of these wars. Living Earth Gathering and some other folks organized bridge vigil. It would be a candlelight vigil on the bridges all up and down Waterfront Park, and we filled the bridges. The Oregonian. We deserve a better paper than that in our city. Wrote this little blurb and said there were 300 people out on the bridges. The bridge tender on one of the bridges called up and said, there's at least 3,000 on my bridge. And apparently somebody who wasn't even out there wrote the story, and the Oregonian was forced to, they put a little blurb somewhere on like page D92, but retract. Shortly after that, I had occasion to visit with the man who was their public relations. I don't remember his exact title. He was a pretty cool guy. He was better than the Oregonian deserved. And he said, I can't believe the uproar over this number thing. And I thought, oh, well, Michael, you know, those bridges were full of people who subscribed to the Oregonian. And until the 300 number, they believed what you print was the right thing. They don't do it anymore.
Yeah, no doubt. What was the atmosphere like on the bridges? Was it pretty solemn? Or?
Yeah, it was fairly solemn. Everybody had candles. The it was, I can't believe we're still at war, I can't believe we're still at war, and I can't believe anybody's buying will be out of Iraq by the end of the year. Yeah. Except for all our advisors and our support troops and our contractors, and just in case, who knows who.
Yeah.
Can't believe how quiet it got.
Yeah, the park is quiet. There are a few people manning the information booth, a few people sitting at benches. Most of the people are down at the march, though, no doubt.
Or in the kitchen chopping veggies.
It is getting close to time, isn't it?
Have you heard any about how weatherproof it is? I'm hearing stories that morning might be even a touch of frost.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. I had not heard that. Well, you know, I think most people have sleeping bags that go down to 10 or 15 degrees, and it doesn't usually get that cold here.
It seems to me there's a lot more big tarps over every place than I saw last time I was down.
Yeah, so I think the tarps will keep things dry. We just heard from the kitchen they're rearranging there to winterize. They're putting a floor down to keep the water flowing underneath it and coming into compliance with everything the fire marshal is asking. So I think they are hunkering down and planning to be here for a while.
When I was visiting with the folks in the medic tent, it seemed like there was a big need for socks. So, and if you're out there listening who have a whole drawer full of socks that you never wear, bring some of them on down. And I think as cold weather progresses, I saw one man who is probably from the homeless population walking around with just a sweater. Bring it on down. There's lots of folks who can use lots of things, and it's another dollar that doesn't have to go to the corporations.
Yeah. Come on down, get a feel of some of this community, get a feel of some of this loving, and drop off your socks.
You can drop off your socks.
Drop off donations at the information booth.
Do we have stuff here that we can play music?
Sure, I think we just have to hit one of those buttons over there.
Oh, what's good?
Well, maybe it's already playing, and we just have to turn it up.
Hmm.
Want to pick something out for us, Mark?
Hi, from downtown Portland, Occupy Freedom Rectangle. Main Street runs right through it. And if only they would rearrange these tarps, they could prove the Pythagorean theorem. I'm joined by Meredith. Hi, Meredith.
Hi.
What are you doing down here today?
Well, I want to spread the word about a undead zombie march that will take place on Halloween. The zombies are organizing to warn us against the dangers of coal. They have come back from the dead. Victims of climate change and coal-fired power plants to warn us before it's too late.
Well, Meredith, where is that going to take place?
So it'll be on Halloween, Monday, October 31st, and we are going to meet at 3 p.m. at Chapman Square, and there will be a zombification station starting at noon in the art tent, also in Chapman Square. So you can come and put on your zombie makeup and make your own tombstone and have fun.
It does sound like a fun event, and it's specifically aimed at awareness around coal. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, so there is numerous coal export terminals that are proposed for the Northwest right now that would export domestic coal, up to 80 or 100 million tons of it annually, to Asia. And this is happening as Oregon is transitioning away from our only coal-fired power plant.
Where do we get the coal from, then?
The Powder River Basin, Wyoming, and Montana.
And it's trucked here?
Yeah, on trains.
On trains. Mm-hmm. And we use some at our coal-fired plant, and we're planning on shipping some.
Right. We use about 8 million tons annually now, but that is going to be decommissioned. We won't be burning any coal in the future.
Well, that's the good news, isn't it?
It's good news, except that the coal companies are still looking for a way to profit on our domestic coal sources, and they would ship 10 times that amount of coal overseas to be burned, which will still be leading to climate catastrophe.
No doubt. Where is it going? China or?
China and other countries as well, yeah.
And it's an Oregon issue because they're going to ship from here.
Right. Well, Oregon and Washington, there are ports proposed in Coos Bay, Oregon, St. Helens, Oregon, Longview, Washington, right across the river, and Bellingham.
What can the humans do about this?
What can the humans do? Well, we can ally ourselves with the zombies this Monday. and you can go to portlandrisingtide.org for more info about this event and more info about coal export terminals.
Right. Is it a state initiative to get more coal transport, or how's that working? Who's behind this?
Who's behind it? As far as I know, the coal companies themselves are behind these export terminals. There's not... The state of Oregon has been working against increasing the amount of coal that we burn. But it is the companies that are coming in and proposing to the various port authorities that they build these giant export facilities.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, other than raising awareness, what can we do about that corporate power? It seems like a corporation has a certain amount of money, and they can do as they choose to a certain extent.
Right. Well, we'll be marching to the banks. Bank of America is one of the biggest funders of coal on Earth, and coal infrastructure and these coal export terminals as well. And we want to make them aware that they need to move their money because they are the ones that are financially backing this industry right now.
So put a little pressure on the financial backers.
Uh-huh.
That sounds great. Can you give the time and place of the zombification, please?
Zombification is from noon until 3, and the march is at 3, and this is on Halloween in Chapman Square.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by, Kaven.
Thanks a lot.
Well done.